coming to you live from the Guide Dogs to the Blind campus in Boring, Oregon. This is Shane Davidson, and you have another edition of the Audio Guide Dog Training Documentary Podcast. Hope you'll enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. And now, on with the episode. For the 15th of May, 2012, you've got podcast number 9 of the Guide Dog Documentary Podcast. I am Shane Davidson, my guide dog is Cleveland. Welcome to this edition. Not a lot of to cover this time around. The day consisted of the morning and afternoon in Gresham, Oregon, in a residential community. In the morning, we did traffic checks. Cleveland did awesome on traffic checks, and I think, you know, we'll be fine doing those. Sidewalkless routes have helped me prepare for the sidewalkless stuff I will have to do when at home, when leaving my apartment building. That was a help, and I do appreciate that. I don't know what else to really say, because we've got no really frequently asked questions this time around. But suffice it to say, we've had a great day. Cleveland and I are meshing rather well now that I understand corrections, and we're slowly gelling. It'll come. It's not an overnight thing. But we are coming together nicely. With that said, today's interview of about 49 minutes is an interview with Steve Wetlaufer and Karen Hedrick. Karen Hedrick has guide dog Trixie. Steve Wetlaufer is living with her and the dog. So let's go ahead and talk to them for the next 49 minutes or so and see what they have to say. For the 13th of May, 2012 is the date of this recording. Good morning. My name is Shane Davidson with Guide Dog Cleveland, and we're joined via teleconference this morning by Steve Wetlaufer with no guide dog, and Karen Hedrick with Guide Dog Tricks, both of them in the city of Guelph, in the province of Ontario, in the country of Canada. Good morning, you two.
Hello.
Hello, Shane.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning, and I thank you both for taking the futuristic time out of your schedules to join me this morning.
No trouble at all. We're happy to be here. And it's cool to hear all of your different adventures as you go. It's not a lot of people do that, so it's kind of interesting to get to hear what happened.
Kind of giving me some flashbacks, some old memories of being in training. That was 5 years ago. Yikes!
We're here this morning just to do a free-flowing discussion, but we'll start with the boring stuff. Start with introductions. Ladies first, Karen, how about you talk about who you are, how many dogs you've had, and how you ended up going to Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Alrighty. Yeah, you've already introduced me. I live in Guelph. graduated from university about 7 years ago. I got Trixie about 5 years ago. She's my second dog, but my first dog I only had for about 2 months, and then she had to retire due to medical stuff, and she was from another school. So I always feel like Trixie's my first guide dog, but then I feel like I'm jipping my other one from even getting recognized, so I always try to remember to recognize her, too. I got Trixie in April of 2007. One of the big reasons I chose Guide Dogs for the Blind was all the people I'd gone had nothing but positive things to say about it. It was a great follow-up program, great veterinary assistance if you need it. In the other school, I went with them because I'd heard good things from some grads, but then I started hearing mixed things, and then I had my own experience that taught me quite a few valuable lessons, and so the choosing to go to Guide Dogs was was a very good decision, and I had a successful dog out of the deal. I mean, any dog from any school can go bad, so I can't, you know, I don't want to say that all dogs from GDB have long, wonderful careers, because every now and then you get a dog, you bring it home from GDB, and it says, this guide work thing, how about we just go shove it? or they develop some kind of illness or whatever, but I think the point is that the school is really good at responding to whatever's going on, and will help you out. The other school, I didn't get a lot of help, and then until they got a medical report that said, no, I don't think this dog should be a guide dog, and they were like, okay, we retire. Oh, all right. Yikes. So I think there'd be a lot more interaction going on from what I've heard from people who've had to retire their dogs early. Anyway, so had a guide dog for 5 years, and a good 5 years. I don't know what else to say.
So are you working now? Or are you
I'm working at Desire to Learn in Kitchener, doing a lot of accessibility testing for their interface so that hopefully everybody has a good experience using it as an instructor and a student and from all angles. That's my aim anyway. They keep me very busy testing all their new features and stuff.
So that's you in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Steve, how about we see what we can cover with you in 90 seconds or less?
Sorry.
All right. I'm Steve, and I am a nutshell. No, I'm Steve. If you've ever gone to the Vomit Comet, I'm that guy. I've been around Karen for a long time. We've been together for quite a while, and before that, we were pretty good friends. And I guess I'm here not because I have a guide dog, but because I don't know. We kind of thought it might be interesting to kind of give the perspective of what happens when a guide dog kind of gets dropped on you by the person who goes to training. And, you know, because it was a big kind of learning curve for me, learning what, you know, what I can say and do and whatever with the dog and when, and how much my life was going to change, because that whole month Karen was gone, I really wasn't sure what was going to happen when she got home. So I think that's why I'm here.
So my favorite starting question is this, you know, and this was, you know, when I recorded this, you know, this may be on a separate podcast than the earlier interview, but, you know, this morning's question, you know, the first question I always start with, or we try to go from, you know, Karen, you've mentioned you've gone to two different guide dog schools for training.
Yeah.
Compare and contrast, you know, what was your first school? You know, why didn't you return there versus going to guide dogs?
My first school was Canadian Guide Dogs for the Blind.
I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. Oh, dear. I heard, well, for one thing, when I went away the first time, I had no idea. I didn't even know what questions I should ask guide dog handlers. I was, like, sort of going by the seat of my pants. And CGDB was from near where I grew up. The person who owned the school had once done my orientation and mobility training when I was a wee child. So I thought, and I'd heard, and I knew a few people who had dogs from there, and they seemed to be doing pretty well. So I thought, well, it must be okay, I think. And I applied to both CGDB and GDB. And for some reason, GDB hadn't managed to come to do my home interview yet, and CGDB said, we have a dog for you. And I was so, like, gung-ho about getting my life going, because I was finishing university when I applied while I was finishing university, and I wanted to, you know, it was like, go to university, get a guide dog, move on with life, and CGDB said, we have a dog, and I went for it. Even though they said, we'll put you in a retrain class, which threw me off, because I was a newbie, and they kept saying, oh no, you'll have individualized instruction, we'll be able to help you. No, I left that class completely unprepared. I didn't feel like they prepared me. It was like they had me in this bubble of an environment where nothing could go wrong, even though I think having things go wrong in training is the best training experience you could possibly get.
Been there, done it.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't learn when you have someone there to go, hey, no, do this, no, how about this, listen to this, you know, and so that when you get home and this happens, you don't know what to do when you're all alone.
So you'll know what to do. All right, carry on.
Yeah, if you don't get that experience, you come home and you're completely on your own and unprepared. And that's what happened with the first dog. whereas when I came to GDB, for one thing, I went in a proper class. I decided to go for a newbie class, even though I had a dog before, because it's a different school, different training methods. And my first dog, well, didn't work out so well, so I thought maybe I should start from the beginning. And we had lots of time to do routes where there were instructors watching, but they weren't, like, right on you, so you had time to problem solve and learn stuff. So when you come home, you're prepared, and you can hear that instructor voice in your head telling you, you know, follow your dog, or listen to the traffic, or, you know, are you turning, are you going with him, or are you turning to face him, or all those things, you know, so that when you get home, you have, like, a toolkit of problem-solving where, and you've had things go wrong in training, so you can remember what in heck you're supposed to do.
And you have tiny mollies in your head.
Yes, you have tiny mollies in your head. Great. I even had that happen the other day. I kind of laughed because listening to your podcast was kind of a brush up because things have become so almost like muscle memory instead of mind memory. And hearing her describe the footwork was like, yeah, do I really still do that? Oh, if I got sloppy? and I got myself turned around and I heard her in my head saying, listen to traffic. I laughed. I'm like, wow, she's even in my head.
You know, you were in the, just for those, and I've probably already covered this in previous editions, I'm sorry! But, oops, let's bring up the proper profile, there we go. We're in the four-week program, now GDP in San Rafael and Boring. Boring does all two-week courses, with San Rafael combining two- and three-week courses.
Yes.
You're hearing my experiences in a two-week course. What are the differences you're seeing in the... the 2 week versus the 4 week.
It seems like you're getting out with the dog a heck of a lot faster. Like, we had 3 days of different Juno and stuff like that before we even got the dog. And you did a workout with your dog the day you got him, which was like, holy mackerel! Because when I got the dog, we just spent the rest of the afternoon bonding. We did some healing practice up and down the hall, but we didn't hit the street. We hit the street the next day to do our first straight shot, so I'm noticing that you're getting out there a lot faster, and I'm assuming that the lectures are a lot less them reading the lectures and a lot more you guys just talking about it, which...
That's exactly what it is, and...
Yeah, because they actually read over the lectures even though we had them.
No, we were told, these are the lectures you read, here are your study questions, go nuts.
And I think that's why they're doing that, so that they can get to the nitty-gritties of working your dog. Plus, it seems like they're not asking you to memorize routes so much anymore as just get the footwork down with your...
Unless your name is Shane and you don't know how to count.
Yeah, and I'm trying to fathom, because like, for the first week they had an instructor with us, and then the next week they started to cut back on the help, and we started thinking about freelancing and stuff, but it's like, you only have one more week to get everything in.
Well, next week...
How this is all
going to
work.
Next week is going to be personalized instruction. Like, say, Jerry and I may go into Gresham for a day for street, sidewalkless routes.
Mm-hmm.
I may need transpo work. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, because it sounds like they do a lot more individualized, figuring out exactly what you need, but like, well, let's just take everybody on the subway, rather or not they actually use a subway in their home environment. Stuff like that, which is kind of neat, because you can actually mention specific things that you need to work on. And, I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to fit everything in. Like, they're going to probably do the traffic checks next week.
Yep, some idiot's going to be driving out the blind guy with a car.
What's that?
Some idiot's going to be driving out the blind guy with a car.
Yeah,
one of those.
Yeah, where they drive up behind you, and they drive out in front of you, and they cut you off, and they're a real... jerkbag, just to see what your dog will do. I know they'll have somebody right with you to make sure nothing goes wrong.
And then you get some funny looks from the
bathroom
guy going, what is that?
Some kind of maniac person keeps driving up in front of that blind guy. I think we should call the authorities.
Someone probably has.
They probably have.
Yeah, I wonder how many times something like that actually happens if they're doing it on a street. If someone sees, hello 911. There's a ruthless, heartless individual trying to mow down a blind person and a seeing eye dog.
I think the van is marked, so I'm hoping that helped. But then the guide dog instructors are out to get their own people. Like, I don't know. Yeah. So I think the van says, like, guide dogs for the blind. Oh, I wonder do they have a hybrid car in your campus?
I don't know if they have a hybrid car in our fleet. I should ask.
Yeah, because they knew it's San Rafael, so I wasn't sure if they were going to drive at you with a hybrid car.
Oh, and by the way, I said seeing eye dog on purpose.
Yes.
Not because I think they're seeing eye dogs. See, I know that they're guide dogs or service dogs, but everyone says seeing eye dog.
Yeah.
So I have to pull that when I've got a confused cab dispatcher who's like, you have a guard dog with you? No, I have a seeing eye dog, you know?
Oh, that's always fun. And I think yesterday when we were in Walmart, and this is one of those things that I notice a lot more now, is as a blind person, you always get stared at. You're always going to get stared at. But when Karen came home from GDB with Trix, one thing I noticed is that we got a lot more attention. And it didn't so much go to me as it went to Karen. But one of the funny things that happens is you you hear a lot of muttering between people, oh, you know, oh, look at the dog, and sometimes it's like, you know, parents to kids, or kids to parents, or both, and sometimes
it's
just
pet that dog.
People. And the funniest part about that you can't pet that dog is it's often the kids saying that to the mom and dad.
Yeah, I know.
I heard that yesterday.
But, yeah, one of the things that happens is, no matter what, you are always a conversation piece, and I would probably say an ambassador for the school. Mm-hmm. And even I've become an ambassador for the school, because what tends to happen is, let's say Karen and I are in a store or something, and she's up, you know, paying or getting helped to find what she needs, and I'm waiting for her to come back. Mm-hmm. Instead of waiting for Karen to be finished what she's doing, and you know, then ask her about, you know, where she got her dog, they'll come up to me and just go, hey, that's a nice dog.
Yeah.
And they'll start asking me guide dog questions.
It's like, dude.
One of the things that happens is, you know, I really have to pay attention too, because I don't want to feed these people bad information or misinformation that would give them, you know, the wrong idea. So anything Karen says about guide dogs, I find myself paying very close attention to it and trying to remember it as best I can, because it happens a lot where I'm with her and they'll ask me about her because she's busy. And by the time she's done, they're gone.
Yep.
So I kind of have to know my stuff a little too, and, you know, just like she does. So I find myself being like a spokesperson for dogs.
Now, you know, we're talking, you know, you being a spokesperson. Now let's roll through. Okay, Karen finishes this 4-week training. You get the call, I'm coming home.
Okay.
What goes through your head?
Well, it actually starts a little bit before that. It kind of starts, you know, when she goes, because it was kind of cool, because we had her her mom and dad actually came to visit beforehand. They live like 6 hours away, and every now and then they get down here. So we kind of, you know, this guide dog was already becoming a reality, because what was happening was we, you know, they were going out and buying certain things that she knew she was going to need, like, you know, bins for the dog food, bolts to, you know, to stick the, you know, to screw the tie down into the wall, just, you know, different stuff. I think you bought, what, a dog bed?
A dog bed, a storage unit,
yeah,
with, like, different
storage drawers for all your toys.
Dog,
yeah,
toys and different,
so,
supplies.
So, all this stuff is already here. So, by the time she heads off for the airport, this stuff's already stewing in my head. So, you know, I can walk around the house and I can see this dog bed, I can see this, you know, this stand full of drawers that wasn't there before in the guest room. I can see these, you know, these different bowls, these different accessories that she had. And I run across these things as I'm doing stuff around home, and I'm just thinking, huh, you know, sooner or later, we're actually going to need these things for a purpose. They're not just going to be sitting here as decorations. So, and as the month goes, you know, goes by, I'm thinking, you know, I really like being by myself. I'm a, you know, I'm kind of a loner sometimes. But I'm thinking, man, it'll be great when Karen comes home. And that thought is always followed immediately by, it's not going to be the same when she comes home. Things are going to be different, and I'm not going to know what to do. And, you know, then of course, you know, it the days count down, and you know, I get the, I've landed, I'm coming home, you know, text or phone call or whatever it was, and all this stuff starts going through my head, you know, like, what should I be doing to prepare, you know, for when this descends on me here?
Should we move,
like,
the
do
shoes?
I, yeah, do I need to move the shoes? Do I need to put stuff out? Am I going to be able to leave things out on the counter? Because I hear all these stories about, you know, even guide dogs, they're still dogs. I think they even have, like, a lecture, your guide dog is really a dog,
yes,
or something. And
they did in my day anyway.
Yeah,
I'd actually have to look.
Yeah, cause I remember Karen telling me about that, and I'm thinking, you know, your guide dog is really a dog, and those words are in my head, and I'm thinking, okay, even though it's a guide dog and it's highly trained and highly skilled, I've heard stories even about guide dogs chewing stuff up, or,
pooping,
you know,
pooping in the house,
going, you know, going up onto counters, jumping up on the furniture when you don't really want them there, you know, breaking stuff, eating things, and I'm thinking, what am I about to get into here? You know, because I know Karen's the one who's going to control the dog, and I know Karen's competent. I'm well aware of that. But, you know, that dog can't be attached to Karen 24/7. And so I'm thinking, okay, and let's say that it does start getting into things. What am I allowed to do? What am I allowed to say? Because it's Karen's dog. When does it, you know, stop being Karen's dog and you know, become my place to sort of tell this thing, this monstrous beast, to, you know, F off. Get out of there, you know, stop doing this, you know, get out of the
My shoe is not a bone.
Yeah, my shoe is not a Kong, you know. And
the garbage can is not your sniff toy.
That was another thing. We had step on garbage can in the bathroom that we got specifically so the dog couldn't get into the garbage.
Yes. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, we're good in the garbage department unless she figures out how to open cupboard doors in the kitchen because we have it behind the cupboards, like, partly for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm just, all of this stuff is going through my head, like, what am I allowed to do or say to this dog, and when am I allowed to do it? And, of course, Karen gets home, and I don't want to ask her this stuff right away because she's just trying to settle in. But I knew immediately that the dog was and I would get along. Because the first thing she did when she introduced herself was go right for the pills. So, yeah, right for the old crotcheroo. So we were good. But I thought, okay, you know, I know she's showing me all this love, but I was afraid to pet her. Even though she was off harness, it's like, am I allowed to say hello to you? Because, like, what if I do? Would it screw up the barn? Because I know nothing. Like, I know not a thing at this point, and I'm trying to be real careful, you know, with, you know, what I ask Karen and when, because she's just trying to figure all this stuff out herself. Plus, she was hurt.
Yeah, I gave myself a nice knee injury at the end of training.
Yeah, you had physio and everything. That was fun. But no, it was really kind of, it took a little while to find, you know, that balance. And I was very, very nervous when they were coming home because I didn't know what I was allowed to do. And you know, when, and I'm thinking, you know, eventually we're going to have to go out and we're going to have to do all this stuff and the dog's going to live here. And I was kind of nervous.
So
I felt bad making him so nervous because I was trying to make things work out perfect. And I didn't want him to, like, I was the one who wanted to make this giant investment getting a dog. I didn't want to make him feel like, holy crap, it's going to involve him, too. But, well, I mean, the, when you get to the root of it, it's, we're all living together, two people and a dog living in this apartment. So.
Yeah, we're kind of a unit here, and that goes whether, you know, you're roommates or a family or a couple or whatever. There's boundaries, and those boundaries have to be established and respected. And I found, you know, when Karen came home, that's kind of when my training began, and I had to pretty much learn on the fly what I should and shouldn't do.
So what helped you adapt to having this four-legged, wagging, sometimes barking, guide dog
yes,
in the apartment?
Yes, it did bark. She did bark for the first little while.
Well, the thing that really helped me in this case was actually the people who raised her did an awesome job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this dog, like, Trix is, you know, awesome. Like, all those things I was talking about before, chewing stuff up, going up on the counters, jumping on the furniture, tearing up things, you know, crapping the house. None of that happened. Like, so, you know, that took a huge load off my mind because it was, you know, it was basically, we kind of have this house Trixie-proofed already.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we were actually able to kind of let her be more on her own, you know, sooner than they suggest because, you know, she was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, she never really got into trouble. She just explored, and once she felt, you know, comfortable in the house, she'd, like, you know, go where she wanted to go. For the first little while, she was pretty much, you know, stuck to Karen, you know, even not on leash. It was like, where goes Karen, so goes the dog. But
including the bathroom.
Yes, that, kind of.
She tried.
But
even to this day, she sits outside the bathroom like, let me in.
But yeah, it really helped that she was, you know, that she had really good house manners. And, you know, I know when Karen goes to retrain in hopefully another few years, you know, hopefully it's not anytime soon, that it's kind of going to start all over again because not every dog is created equal, which was one of those things that we learned when we had visitors over with different dogs. Is they each have their little quirks, and what's Trixie-proofed does not mean dog-proofed.
No.
Like, we, you know, we except had
a one lady froze free to let your dog off the leash. The house is proof. He walked into the other bedroom. I forgot that I had
a
suitcase unzipped with some empty, there were some empty pill bottles, and decided to play whack-a-roo around with a pill bottle. And I'm like, how the hell, Trixie ever gets into that? What the heck? And then he was taller, and he could stick his head into the toy bin and grab toys, and I'm like, oh man,
All right.
Okay, it was Trixie-proof, but it's not dog-proof, apparently.
But, yeah, like, Trixie herself actually did a lot to put my mind at ease with, you know, I'm not going to have to keep a constant eye on you and yell at you all the time. The worst thing I had to do was was solve the problem of, you know, once she got over her whole, you know, I'm always going to stick to Karen and I'm fascinated by Karen because Karen is my person type thing, then she would move on to, well, you know, hey, if Steve's out here doing whatever, I'm going to go see what he's doing. I know Karen's content. So she would come and she would follow me around and just, you know, she would get under my feet a lot to the point where I actually started calling her Visa. because she was everywhere I wanted to be. So, you know, but we had the biggest issue she had was she liked to go under our dining room table to see if we had dropped anything.
Uh-huh.
She's a scavenger.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think the kind of the time I had my major breakthrough when I'm allowed to kind of discipline the dog was, well, the one time when she almost stuck her head in the oven. But the other time she'd just done that table thing one too many times, and Karen wasn't around to catch her. So I snuck up really quiet, and I didn't even think about this when I was doing it. Because I'd heard of this, and I thought, okay, people always say this works, and I didn't even think about it when I did it, but I snuck up really quiet, and she's under the table, like, trying to lick the floor, and just scavenging away, and I said, Trixie, and nothing happened, so I just lifted up my fist and went, wham, as hard as I could on the table, and I'd never seen that dog run so fast. But we never had that problem again. And I laughed when she just took off like a shot. It was like she was launched out of a cannon. Down the hall she went, like, oh my god.
That table has bad things.
And I laughed. And then I thought, oh no, was that wrong? Should I not have done that? And I went to Karen and I said, you're either going to love me or hate me right now. And she said, why did the dog just do that? And I told her and she laughed. And I'm like, okay, I know I'm okay. And ever, you know, like, yeah, me and Trixie have always gotten along great, and I'm not even a dog person, really. So, you know, I don't know. Her and I are just fine. She'll listen to me if she has to, but I really don't have to tell her off that much. Like, she spends most of her time with me just sucking up.
Now, for those, I mean, I'm going to be coming home. You know, my roommate's a dog person.
Cool.
And, but, you know, it's going to be, okay, what should those of the population that don't have guide dogs and they're having this dog just kind of, dropped on their heads, what should they be ready for? What should they do or not do upon a new dog team's return to the apartment or to the house?
When it's a very new team, just the best thing you can do is just kind of mouth shut and ears and eyes open. Just pay attention to, you know, to the kind of things that the team is doing.
And I would say the new team should walk around the apartment with the dog on a leash, and as they walk through each room, notice if it's drawn to anything that maybe you should move. Think like a dog, you know?
Yeah.
As you're walking past the cat litter box, think, oh, maybe we should, you know, put that in a room that the dog doesn't get to, or I know some people did some funny thing with cat litter boxes to... The cat could access it, but the dog couldn't get its schnoz in, I forget what. But like all of a sudden, oh, maybe we shouldn't put those candies on that low table just yet. Or, oh, gee, the dog's awfully drawn to, you know, this, you know, maybe I should keep an eye, you know. And so doing that tour around the apartment is a real big help.
But, yeah, the best thing that I did was just observe. Like, how does, you know, the dog react to things? How is it reacting, you know, like, what's its manner like? How does Karen talk to the dog? You know, how does the dog respond when Karen talks to it in X or Y way? You know, what does she do when she's left alone? You know, just, you can learn all of those little things at first. Just, you know, try and keep your distance. Like, just be at sort of a watching distance. But, you know, but at the same time, don't act standoffish towards the dog if the dog wants to say hi to you. You know, it's probably okay to say hi as long as the harness isn't on, because you want the dog to get to know you and know that you're part of the furniture, so to speak. you're here, you're not going anywhere, because, you know, you have people, you know, visiting you and you go and visit people, and, you know, you want to kind of become a constant, but you want to become a good constant. So just sort of, you know, observe how the dog reacts to things and try and, you know...
And I would let the handler do a lot of the playing with the dog, because if you start playing with the dog...
Especially at first.
At first. The dog's going to think, oh, he's a lot of fun, and he never makes me work. Maybe I like him better. So I've heard a lot of horror stories. People come home to their families, and families don't realize the difference between a guide dog and a pet dog, and they take the dog out for this great run in the field, and then the handler starts noticing, hey, my dog keeps going to my brother instead of me, because the guy got to do lots of fun stuff with this dog and didn't have to do any of the work stuff. So I wouldn't feed or play with the dog or do any of those things right away, because you really need to establish that bond, and you're just a part of the house, but not...
Kind of introduce that sort of thing gradually.
Yeah.
So that the dog knows, okay, you know, my primary person is, you know, in our case, Karen. Mm. But, you know, hey, if I want extra fun, I can go to this dude over here. But I always know that, you know, because we've actually done the little... the exercise, like, where I'll be playing with Trix or, like, Petner or whatever, and Karen will call her over, and pretty much without fail, it's like, yeah, Steve's been a slice, I gotta go. You know, and she goes right to Karen.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can introduce that stuff, but you have to, you know, it's what I said before about boundaries, but, like, once you establish those, you can kind of maybe slowly start easing off on that as long as the dog knows...
Who's who,
you know, who's, you know, like, the hierarchy of things.
Yeah.
You know, like, Steve is, you know, maybe to be listened to and can be played with, but Karen's like the master switch, you know? It's like, you know, that you've got these little buttons that can do all this different stuff, but if someone hits that big red button, that overrides everything. So, you know, you get to a point where, you know, where everything just makes complete sense to the dog, but you do it over a period of time. Let Karen have the fun with her, let Karen do the working, and just be there to say hello, maybe give her a few quick pets at first, and then gradually start, you know, just amping it up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so now, like, if I want to throw stuff to Trix, it's fine. You know, she won't bring it back to me just the same way she won't bring it back to Karen. So.
Yeah, she's the weirdest dog. Well, let's chase something, but bringing it home, bringing it back, nah. Your dog.
But yeah, like, that's what she does. Like, she, you know, she knows Karen is what Karen is, but she knows that I'm here if she wants to hang out.
You know, we've covered, you know, going home. Let's cover, you know, the basic aspects of training, you know, follow-ups, that sort of thing, Karen. Let's go through, you know, what your training experience was like, and... And then let's, you know, because some of the people are just, you know, I know a couple of people that are just applying for guide dog school, so what should they expect?
From the... I found that my field rep, I don't know, everybody gets a different person, well, depending on where you are, you'll get a different person. If you're in anywhere, Ontario, Quebec, and further east, I think you'll definitely get Chuck, and he's a very observant guy. When he comes to see you for a home interview, he's taking in your whole area. It's amazing how much he remembers, because when I first got home, before he even came for his first follow-up, I was having an issue. My landlady told me that I couldn't use this one area that I'd been using to give Trix a chance to relieve, and she wanted me to use this other crazy part of the parking lot where cars were driving in and out of, and I wasn't too down with that. So I phoned Chuck in a panic, because this is the great thing about Guide Dogs for the Blind, is there's a graduate services. You can call either your field rep or the graduate services number and talk to somebody and get some kind of advice about a problem that you're having. And when you're new, oh boy, you're going to have lots of times to need advice. Like when I discovered Trixie didn't like thunder or fireworks. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah. Trixie 1, Braille Blazer 0.
Tried to crawl under Steve's desk, shelter.
No, let me stop you. There was no crawling about that.
No, this is true.
Because what we had discovered was when thunder happened, she sticks to me because, okay, if you've never seen Karen, I know Shane has, but if you've never seen Karen, she's quite small.
She's wee small,
you're
quite
maybe, what, 4'9",
yeah,
Karen?
Yeah, something like
that. You know, I'm about a 5'10", rather, you know, large, some would say too large, man. And when, at the minute thunder happens, Karen kind of doesn't exist. And this isn't anything that I think we did wrong, because Karen, I tried to stay out of the way. I try and avoid this dog, you know, but she, will stick to me, as if to say, you know, this giant man will protect me. And there's one day we were getting some pretty solid thunder, and I was sitting at the computer typing something, you know, considering turning it off because we didn't have a UPS at the time. And Trix is, you know, she runs to the living room and she looks and she makes this running dive under the right side of my desk, and I have one of those Braille blazers that's flat, kind of looks like a suitcase. And it's sitting under the desk, and she takes this running headlong dive right at it and just nails this Braille blazer, just smokes it right into the wall. Like, so that she's like, get out of my way, suitcase, I need some room. And she's just under this desk where the Braille blazer once stood, and she's like just in the shaking, quivering mass, and I'm like, get out of there. But I don't know how she could take me seriously because I was laughing so hard. But yeah, it's pretty funny. There was no crawling about that.
That's true.
She did not crawl.
So anyway,
that was Dive Bomb 101.
What was that?
That's Dive Bomb 101.
Yeah, pretty much.
Does the Braille blazer still exist?
Yeah,
it does.
It still works and everything.
It's just fine, but she has a hard head. You know,
well, so does mine.
Yeah, but like the Braille blazer is hard, and she like just ran into it, like just, and she was fine, and the Braille blazer was okay. Everybody came out largely unscathed. So
the wall, maybe not.
Trix just has some embossing on her forehead. So anyways, back to where we were, follow-ups and Chuck in the air.
Grad services are great. And anyway, I called Chuck when I've been told, no, I can't really leave in this area. And he says, just walk down to the road. There's a boulevard right there. You can use it. And I'm like, holy crap, you remember my whole neighborhood. Are you part cyborg? Honestly. Like, it's amazing. Like, and he's done that with other intersection stuff. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll be talking about intersection. I was having trouble. Oh, that's the one up by the ice cream store that we went to. Man, you're good. Knowing that you have, like, 190 teams and you still remember, you know, details about our neighborhood. I thought that was freaking amazing.
And one of the cool things about Chuck, on the follow-ups that I've been around for, and even when he did Karen's application interview, the in-home, he always asks me how I'm doing, like how I feel about everything. Like, not, you know, it's like, how's Karen, how's Trixie, you know, how do you find everything? And then he'll even say to me, and, you know, is everything good with you? Like, and he means in general, and, you know, he's also concerned, like, you know, how are you and Trix and Karen all getting along? Which is kind of a neat thing that he does.
That was one of the first questions he asked me when I left on the interview, the in-home interview. He says, is Steve okay with this? Have you had a talk with Steve about the dog and what changes that's going to mean for him and all this stuff? And I'm like, yeah, we have, and he seems okay with it. And like, but he was very aware that this dog is going to affect...
there are more than one person in this, or there is more than one person in that.
This is the team and the other family members. So
yeah, it seems like they're really conscientious of you know, the whole situation that they're, you know, placing this team into, because it seems like they really want the teams to succeed, you know, and really kind of, you know, either take care of any obstacles before they can become obstacles, or, you know, remove them as soon as they, you know, come to light, I guess, which I think is really neat.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I kind of appreciated, because, you know, how are you and the dog doing? And I wasn't really ready for that question, but I appreciated that he asked it.
No, I never had Chuck for my whole interview. I had the graduate services god.
Yes, Brian Francis.
Yes, I had Brian Francis. Hi.
God, grad services. Oh, man.
He's God to Chuck. He's God. Chuck is Jesus.
There you go.
And we are his
the Holy Trinity of TDB. Who's the Holy Ghost?
See, and we're
a father and a son. So who can be the Holy Ghost?
Molly can be the Holy Ghost.
I haven't seen him yet.
Molly can be the Holy Ghost. There we go.
There we go.
And then we are, of course, all the GDB disciples.
Yeah. There you go.
No, if we're the disciples, we're the dogs.
who were we protecting? The
sheep?
The promise. Oh. I don't know if I would call Trix a sheep.
No, she's certainly not a sheep.
Oh no, she has her own mind.
Oh yes.
And she's stealthy about using it sometimes. But yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. That's one to maybe put out to the universe. Who would be the Who would be? What would the dogs be? In this, if we're having a biblical hierarchy of GDB, in the beginning there were dogs. And dog said, "Hey, we wouldn't even have to reword this just that much. Just you know, put like a find and replace for you know, dog to dog. Just turn it backwards. You know.
There you go."
And dog said, "Let there be kibble." So. Anyways, we're going off the rails here. Where were we?
Training was just I thought it was just awesome, and like he didn't mind asking like or answering simple questions. Like I said something like, "I have a really hard time if I'm coming home with a bunch of groceries and I have a bunch of stuff in my backpack, but I can't carry put the bread in the backpack because it'll squish it, and then my hands are all full because I've got bread in one hand and the dog in the other." And you know, he never made me feel stupid for asking that question. I said, "Well, maybe Steve should come with you and carry the bread." Or,
yeah, but
you know,
if Steve's not around,
yeah,
what
like,
do you do?
Yeah, like he's like, "Well, what did he say?" He's like, "Well, you could if it's a real problem, you could take two trips, come get the main stuff, and then come back for the bread." Or you know, he's like, "Or
because we do have that spot downstairs when we carry stuff up."
Yep, he's like, "You could do that, or you know, have Steve carry it, or." What else did he say? He's like, "Well, you could carry another little bag that you could sling up on your shoulder and put the bread in it so it wouldn't be in your hand anymore, you know?"
Just little stuff that
little
you don't
stuff
think
that
about.
You don't, and then he says it, and you're like, "Well, Tony, why didn't I think of that?"
Well, I think the reason you don't think of it, and I think I would be maybe a little better able to speak on this because, you know, at the time, you're kind of just so focused. The thing, you got very, when you came home and when you were about to go, you think about a million miles ahead of where you were,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't focus on those little things because you were so focused on, like, "I don't want to do anything wrong with the dog," that all this, you know, the smaller picture stuff,
yeah,
kind of, you know, like the way you were trying to fit things into all the routines you had,
mm-hmm.
like trying to, you know, I remember were kind of, I don't want to say in a panic, but you were kind of in a panic.
Yeah.
About, you know, okay, if I have to keep going out with the dog, I haven't figured her schedule out yet, how am I going to, you know, handle these meetings, and how am I ever going to have any free time, because I always have to keep taking the dog out, I'll never be able to sleep in anymore, you know, all these little things that kind of had to fall into place on their own,
mm.
but, you know, you had to kind of, you even did a similar thing with me as, you know, as you did with Chuck, where you'd be like, "How am I ever going to do this?" And I'd be like, "Karen, just do it this way." And you'd be like, "Oh yeah."
Oh, yeah.
And it would be like someone took like a load of, you know, a sack of potatoes off your shoulders.
Yep.
Like, "Oh yeah, I can do this that way."
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're so focused on getting everything right when you first come home that, you know, all of your brain power is focused on that, and you can't sometimes think about that little bit of, you know, those little problem solving things. It's like you can get yourself out of the big jams, like, you know, "Oh, me and the dog just got lost. How do we get out?" And then you get out, but it's like, how am I ever going to get from point A to point B, and I can tell you, and then you're fine.
You turn that seven. You know, you got to figure out. Okay, you know, you relieve your dog at 7 a.m. Pacific time. Eat, piss,
yeah.
Drain.
Yeah.
How do we adjust them to Eastern? You know.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be stuck with that when I go home.
What I did was I just started when I fed the dog. Dog didn't get his her morning food because we were on the plane. Then I fed her when we got home, which was about, I think I finally arrived home at like 8 p.m. or something.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like 7
so
or
that's
eight.
Like 5 Pacific, so I'm like, well, her evening meal is going to be the same. And then the next morning, I took her out for the final around 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And then I just got up in the morning at like 7 a.m.
Our time.
Yeah, our time, and just started feeding her that, and then just started the schedule.
Yeah,
at that point, and she figured it out. Like she didn't really take too long to figure out. Oh, this is the new 7 a.m. All right.
Yeah. See, I didn't realize this, but like dogs are very resilient with the food thing. They can be rather accepting. Because Karen said, "I'm not going to feed her that day," and I'm like, "Oh, if you did that to me, I'd kill you."
Yeah.
But you know, Trix was just fine. She was, you know, she was very happy when she got home to kind of explore the new place and look at her surroundings and.
Yep.
You know, then she got food, and she was just, you know, woohoo, food. You know, and then the next day came, like, she didn't try and...
Because I was waiting for her to wake me up at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, she didn't try and wake us up.
Nope.
She didn't try and do anything like that. It was just, you know, 7 o'clock, our time came, and, you know, Karen got up, made her some food, and you're off to the races.
Yep.
Like, it really, I was surprised how easy it was to change the schedule, because I flew to Europe once, because, you know, you always think about things in human terms and not dog terms. Now, I remember I went to Europe for a month, because we have family over there, and we went during the summer one year, and there was like a 6-hour time difference, and I hardly slept that whole month, because by the time I got my schedule adjusted, it was almost time to come home. So then, you know, I was finding myself, you know, being awake at these just stupid hours, our time, and it took me, you know, pretty much the rest of the summer almost, it felt like, to get myself back to a place where I actually, you know, where my sleeping made sense. And, you know, so, and I'm thinking of this dog, like, on this, you know, Pacific time versus Eastern, and you just throw her into it. How's she going to react to that? But she was fine.
Yeah.
She didn't care. She was happy to go to sleep at our time. She was happy to eat at our time.
I sleep so much in the day, too, that I think, you know.
Well, yeah, she sleeps in your office. She sleeps in your meetings.
Yeah, exactly.
She sleeps everywhere.
She sleeps on the bus.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, but I was surprised how, you know, resilient she was, and maybe resilient's the wrong word, but how, you know, what would you say, like, just easy it was to bend her brain around this new thing.
Yep.
Because it wasn't like she started haranguing you for food at 2.
Nope.
You know, or anything like that.
Nope.
You know, like, nothing early, nothing late, you know, like, she was just happy to go with whatever we went with, so... That was one of those things that I was surprised how easy it was.
Now, I do believe I just heard a dog whine. I don't think that was at your end.
Nope.
Oh, what happened?
You heard a dog whine.
Nope, not at our end.
Yeah,
oh, there is somebody... The only thing on our end is there's somebody... sounds like they're trying to saw through the walls of the apartment building.
Oh, no, that's not a dog. That's a child. Never mind.
Okay.
Oh, a child is whining.
Oh.
Maybe you should bark at it.
Cleveland doesn't bark. Yet.
You'll probably find it's easier to schedule the dog than you think.
Yeah.
We're heading for 11 o'clock.
Get it every so many hours. Oh, I'm here. Okay.
We're heading for 11 o'clock here on the Pacific Coast here, 2:02 Eastern, and I need to grab some food before we head out.
All right.
So let's cover some final things. Karen, anything final from you? You know, anything you want to tell, you know, grads that are, you know, looking at reapplying, those that are already up, that are going through the interview process, and those of us newbies that are already in the program, getting ready to go home at the end of this week?
Well, I guess the training seems like a lot of stuff, but the real hard work really starts when you get home, and you're... training the dog to the home area, and the dog's realizing, hey, you're not just some puppy swap person. You're my new, you know, hardcore first, you know, primary handler. And you have to teach the dog what's acceptable and what isn't. And so that first year is a year of a lot of learning and give and take, I guess. So I guess be prepared that after training is over, there's still quite a bit of work to do. And a lot of happy stuff where you learn just how awesome your dog is. So, and I guess just be patient with yourself, I guess. You're going to make mistakes, and it's going to be, you know, you're still learning too. So, just take it, I guess, one day at a time, and happy trails and good luck, I guess.
Steve, you're next. You know, your final thoughts for those that are, you know, not guide dog users, but having a guide dog coming into the home. Final thoughts for those people.
Well, it's kind of, you know, in a way, it's sort of what Karen said about being, you know, be patient with the dog. Be patient with, you know, your significant other. Be patient with your family member. Everything's not going to feel, like, they're not going to feel panicked and overwhelmed forever. And neither are you. You know, it's going to get easier, and, you know, it's going to be a learning process for you too, but listen to and, you know, respect what, you know, what the guide dog trainee is saying to you. They're telling you all this weird stuff for a reason. They're not trying to be mean. They're not trying to, you know, keep you from having fun with their dog. They're doing this stuff all for a reason, and, you know, just be prepared for things you didn't expect. Like, you know, sometimes you might have to go to bat for your, you know, for your guide dog team with, you know, your family or your friends, you know, they may not understand this guide dog stuff, and they may hesitate to lip off your family, so you might have to do it. You know, just be prepared to do things like that, and, you know, be a good listener, and be there to help when you're needed, and, you know, don't be afraid of the dog, but don't walk around acting like the dog is yours, because the dog's not yours, you just live with it, and, you know, it's like having somebody else's kid over. You can have fun with it, and, you know, you can play, you can enjoy it, but at the end of the day, it's not yours, you know, and the final decisions always do fall to the team leader, which is, you know, in my case, Karen. So know when to back off, but know when to step up too, and it's going to be a learning curve, but, you know, you can do it, and it's not going to be so bad. You know, it's really, be nervous about it, but be the healthy nervous. Don't let it, you know, take over you, and, you know, you don't have to get into a panic. You know, you're going to be okay.
And I know, and the handler can always call grad services if you're having an issue and you're trying to figure out, oh, how the heck am I going to deal with my dog keeps, I don't know, jumping on the bed or something, you
know.
It's
not a sign of weakness to do that.
Yeah, and they're about every aspect of living with the dog, working with the dog, in the house with the dog, everything. So that's what they're for. That's where they get paid the big bucks, so call them if you have to.
Stephen, Karen, thanks very much for your time.
And your
wisdom.
I hope that there's something good you can pull out of this.
Well, I haven't been told in a long time that I have wisdom. thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure speaking to you both, and for listening, thank you very much for listening. You two hang on just right there for just a second, and for the rest of you, that'll be it from here. Hang on just a moment.
Thank you very much to Steve and Karen for that interview and discussion. We'll call it a roundtable discussion. It was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. With that said, from the dormitory at Guide Dogs for the Blind in Boring, Oregon, I'm Jay Davidson. We'll see you next time. Goodbye now. And that ends this episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or complaints, you can leave a comment on the blog post that you downloaded this thing from, or you can email Shane, Shane, @shane.net. Hope to see you next time.